risk to grow up. And so one of the things I want to share with you guys first is a poem that I heard back when I was in college that's about growing up. It's one of the most touching poems I've ever heard, because at the end of the poem, it sums everything up, and it's about what it takes to be a man, not just a man, but an adult that includes women. So I'm going to give you guys a brief reading of that in the poem. And it says, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good or talk too wise, if you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can bear to hear the words you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or wash the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn out tools. If you can take one heap of all your winnings and risk it all on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your term long after you've gone, and so hold on when there's nothing left in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that is in it. And which is more, you'll be a man, my son. One of the most interesting things I found in this poem by Rudyard Kipling is it talks about taking a risk, taking a heap of everything that you have in your life and taking a chance for something bigger, something greater than what you are. For different people, it's different things. For some, you invest in your college education. For some, you invest in your families. I hear countless tales of men and women who have these great careers, and they give them all up for something greater than them. I want to have a family. I want to get married. I want to have kids. But I can't be this high-powered attorney and do that. And so you make sacrifices. You don't work as much. You don't spend as much time going out, going to clubs, going bars. You spend time at home growing that family, investing in something bigger and greater than yourself. Even if you don't have a family, it could be investing in that community around you. And so that's one of the reasons I think this poem is just so deep. And so the message that we're going to have today, one of the scriptures we're going to look at is going to be 1 Corinthians 13:11. And it says, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. And this is a very interesting scripture, because when we're children, we think that the world revolves around us. It's about me, 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 me. What is the world going to give for me? Daddy, for Christmas this year, I want a truck. Daddy, for Christmas this year, I want a new horse. Me, 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 me. But what am I going to do for the world around me? And that's one of the most compelling questions that you're going to have as an adult, is when is it going to stop being about you and start being about the world around you? And so that's the question that we have today. What can the world do for me versus what I can do for the world? I'll share one of my personal testimonies. When I was growing up, I told you guys the last time I shared the word that I was called into the ministry when I was 13 years old. And I denied that and ran from that my entire life. When I was about 25, I was talking to my dad on the phone, and I told him that I was called to be a minister. And I felt like Clark Kent telling somebody I was Superman. I mean, and not only that, but I was embarrassed. And when I was telling my dad that I was going to, you know, give the sermon the last time, I told him 5 minutes before I was about to preach. And he was so upset that I hid that and I didn't share that. I didn't tell any of my friends, really. I didn't tell any of my family, because it wasn't because I was ashamed, but I was afraid of exposing who I really am. And I think that's part of me learning to grow up, is exposing who I really am as a person. And Starin Foshé is the person who can talk to you, who can be a good friend, who'll go out to the bar and have a good time with you. I go and I play sports. All these things that are fun, but I'm not sharing the most compelling part of who I am. And that's someone who works for the Lord, someone who tries to give to others through the Lord. And so that's something that I'm struggling with, something that I'm working on so I can be a greater man. And so one of the stories that we're going to be looking at today is the story of Jacob. I always wonder why Jacob is looked at as being such a strong figure in the Bible when he's such a conniving scoundrel, constantly throughout his entire life. He's always taking and never giving to the world around him. It started out when he was a child. He was supposed to get a blessing, or his brother, rather, was supposed to get a blessing from his father. But his mother knew that he was supposed to be the one who was blessed. And so she helped him trick his dad into giving him the blessing. And then later on in the story, he steals his brother's birthright and runs off after that. So countlessly throughout his life, he's always conniving, always tricking people into things. And one day the Lord spoke to him and he said, I want you to go back home. I want you to go back to your homeland. And he was terrified because he knew he'd connived what he'd done to his brother, and he was afraid his brother was going to kill him. And honestly, you might think rightly so, since you stole the person's birthright. So when Jacob was about to go back home, he was preparing everything. He was telling his servants, okay, I want you guys to go out in front, okay, just in case Esau comes up and tries to kill us all. That's what he was thinking, but he wanted his servants to go out in front. He wanted everybody to be there first to encounter Esau before he got there. He wanted them to bow down and say, I'm going to be your servant now. I'm no longer Jacob's. I'm yours. And while he was doing this, he had an encounter with God. And people often say they're confused by the scripture because it says he wrestled with God and won. When he did this, he wrestled a man and he won. And the guy said, I'm going to give you a new name. I'm going to call you Israel now, one who's wrestled with God and won. And people have a tough time with this. But in him winning there, he's not winning that he beat God in the wrestling match. It's he won in life. He changed in life. No longer was he Jacob, this conniving person, but he's one who's wrestled with God and won. He's wrestled with his own personal demons of being this conniving scoundrel to live for someone else, to live for other people. He was told he was going to be blessed. He's going to be the father of many nations, just like Abraham. Blessed with the people, the chosen people on earth. The scoundrel is now a new person. And so I'm going to read for you his encounter when he met with his brother Esau, because I was reading it recently and I thought this was the most compelling part of the story. It says, then Jacob looked up and he saw Esau coming with 400 men. So he divided his children among Leah, Rachel, and his two servant wives. He put the servant wives and their children in the front, Leah and her children next, Rachel and Joseph last. Then Jacob went on ahead, and as he approached his brother, he bowed down to the ground 7 times before him. And then Esau ran up and embraced him and threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they both wept. That's a touching story of two brothers meeting again. But if you look back, Jacob went ahead. He stood out in front of his family. Selfish Jacob would have gone out, but Israel, a man of God, went out in front of his family to protect him. So he was no longer being this selfish person anymore who only thought of himself. He was thinking of others. He was thinking of his family. At that moment, he became a man. At that moment, he grew up. And that's something that we all have to face every day, is when are we going to stop living for ourselves and start living for the world around us? If you don't have a family, are you going to be living for your friends? Are you going to be that helping, that voice on the other end of the phone? There are a lot of times I have somebody who will call me in the middle of the night because they want advice, and I'll pick up the phone. But deep down inside, I just want to let it ring. Everybody just wants to let it ring. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and she was like, don't you put your phone on silent at night for when people call? And I want to. I really do. But you never know when somebody's going to call with something important, you know. And I like to be that friend who's there for people when they need me. But sometimes I want to be selfish. Sometimes I want to turn that phone off. I want to get some sleep. But you never know when somebody really needs you. I had a really good friend of mine who needed me one time, and I had my phone in my shoe in a corner, so I couldn't hear it ring. And that friend of mine needed me, and I wasn't there for him when they needed me. And that's something that, you know, I really regretted that I wasn't there. You know, I saw a text message saying, I need you. And I felt so bad. I felt so crushed because that friend of mine needed me, but I wasn't there. I was doing my own thing. I was sleeping. And so I'm going to challenge you today to not necessarily be that person who keeps their phone up all night, but just be that person who listens and you're there to just talk to somebody when they need you. And so why should we grow up? One of the things you look at in life is I'm going to grow up. I'm 35 years old right now, right? I'm going to be 35 in a month, should I say. And I feel like I'm 15 years old. You know, like I still like playing sports. I still like playing video games. And I'm standing still in my life being a boy, but life is still going. I'm 34 years old. And so I did a play years ago, and one of the lines Martin Luther King said in the play was, don't get caught up in the inertia of standing still. Life is going, but you're just standing there. You're choosing not to grow up. You're choosing to be where you are because it's comfortable. When I chose to not tell my father, my dad, that I was preaching, it was because I was comfortable being Staron, who goes out and having a good time. It was uncomfortable for me to step out of who I was and be who God called me to be. Sometimes when you go, when you get married, you have kids, you still want to go out. You still want to have a good time. You want to party. You want to be that man you used to be because you used to be in that. But you just have to let go. You have to fight past that feeling that says, I'm going to go out. I'm going to do what I want to do. You got to fight that and sacrifice for your family. Sacrifice for something bigger and better than you are. Also, we have to sacrifice for we grow up for our friends, our family, and our loved ones. If I stay 15 for the rest of my life, everyone's going to look at me like, man, that guy's having a good time. That guy's partying. He's going out. He has nice clothes. He has a nice apartment. I want that life. I wish I wasn't shackled by this house. I wish I wasn't shackled by these kids. But 30 years from now, if I'm living the same way I'm living right now, I'm going to be by myself, a 60-year-old man acting like a 15-year-old boy. And that's tragic. It's a shame. It's good to feel like you're young, but being an adult is a blessing. It's a responsibility because you have to choose to do something greater than yourself. You have to choose to be responsible for your actions and the choices that you make. But man, that feels good. You know, like the first time I went out and I bought my first car, making payments every month, I'm like, man, I feel good. My credit score is going up. I'm being responsible. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm being an adult. It feels good. When I got my first apartment by myself, the first thing I did was invited a bunch of people over for dinner because it felt good to be an adult and have my own place and not have to worry about living with somebody else, putting up with somebody else. It's freedom to be adult, to be an adult and to grow up. You're shackled by responsibility, but that responsibility frees you from being a child. It allows you to make your own decisions. The other day I went home and I fixed myself a bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, my favorite bowl of cereal in the world. I'm like, you know what? I'm a grown man. I'm going to eat a bowl of cereal in the morning. I mean, I'm an adult. Exactly. I'm an adult. I can do what I want to do. And that's a great thing. But if I was still a boy, my mom wouldn't let me eat a bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch for dinner. Even right now, she wouldn't let me do it. She's like, boy, you better go in there and get you something to eat, you know? So I'm telling you guys, it's great to be young. It's great to be free to do whatever you want to do. But the thing that I want most in life is to be shackled by love, to be shackled by family, to live life for people around me. And it just feels good. It's something that's just freeing. And so the last scriptures that I'm going to bring to you guys today, it's a psalm. It says, the Lord makes firm the steps of the one who delights in him. Though he may stumble, he will not fall. For the Lord upholds him with his hands. I was young and now I'm old. Yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging for bread. They are always generous and lend friendly. Their children will be a blessing. And that's Psalms 37:23-26. And it's, as a man, we want to be blessings to the world around us. If we see people on the streets who are hungry, in the city of Dallas, it is illegal to go and feed a homeless person on the side of the street. That's true. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. Who cares? If a person's sitting there looking like they're in need, why not go and take a risk and talk to them? I was telling Poyo about this earlier this week. When you see someone who looks like they have everything together, go and say hi. Go and say hello, because just because they look like they have everything together doesn't mean they do. They may be smiling. They may act like they're happy, but they may have a deep need inside their heart. And they're just waiting on someone to come and say, how are you doing? A good friend of mine, we'd go walking downtown in Fort Worth and we see a old lady sitting on a bench, minding her own business, drinking, having a good time. And she'll go over and say, hey, how are you doing today? I just wanted to see how you were doing. And it makes that person feel special inside, makes them feel like a human being. We take that risk to step outside of who we are for something bigger and better than ourselves. And it may not be saving the world, but it's just talking to somebody, because that could be saving that one person. And so we're going to share the good news. It's that Jesus' work on the cross is the ultimate expression of how we should live our lives for others, sacrificing for others, and loving the people around us.